This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, Israel tried to banish me for 28 years, says former Palestinian prisoner Ayman Sharawna, who was forcibly transferred to Gaza following his 8-month hunger strike in Israeli jails. Resistance burns bright in the village of Isawiya in occupied East Jerusalem, where another hunger striker, Samer Isawi, is from. We'll have an interview with EI contributor Math Musle, who will give us an update on ongoing Israeli land confiscation and home demolitions in Jerusalem.
In the past 3 months, there have been an escalation in the campaign against Isawiya, and in some days they would raid the village 4 times in 1 day.
Also, a report from our correspondent Rami Al-Megari in Gaza on the Israeli fishing ban. A crushing defeat for the Israel lobby as anti-boycott litigation fails in a UK court. One struggle, students defend Palestinian and Latino rights at a conference in Arizona. And news from the global boycott, divestment and sanctions movement, including a boycott resolution passed by Canada's largest undergraduate student union. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor for the Electronic Intifada in Berkeley. We begin in the Gaza Strip. The Electronic Intifada's contributor Joe Catrone interviewed Ayman Sharawna, a Palestinian political prisoner who was on hunger strike for 8 months before being forcibly transferred to the Gaza Strip by Israel. Sharawna is from the West Bank. Catrone reported, quote, Ayman Sharawna needed the help of 2 friends, one supporting him on each side, to walk into the living room of his new apartment overlooking the Gaza seaport on Saturday. But if the physical effects of his 8-month hunger strike were visible, Sharawna projected an air of victory when he spoke with activists who had gathered to welcome him. Quote, my hunger strike secured 2 things, he said. First, it won my release, my freedom. Second, it prevented the arrest of other prisoners who were released in the prisoner exchange in October 2011. Sharawna's hunger strike ended on March 17th with an agreement in which Israel banished him to Gaza from his home in the West Bank city of Hebron for 10 years. A statement by Gaza's Palestinian Center for Human Rights called his forcible relocation, quote, a form of collective punishment and reprisals prohibited under the 4th Geneva Convention. Sharawna's hunger strike was a matter of collective defense as much as securing his personal liberty, he said. Quote, the occupation forces threatened, the night they arrested me, to arrest all Hamas prisoners who were released in the Shalit exchange. But my hunger strike stopped that, end quote. Catrone added in his report that the Israeli prison service gave Sharawna the option of being deported to several different countries, but that he refused to go anywhere but Gaza. Israel also attempted to banish him for 28 years, but agreed on a 10-year deal. The October 2011 prisoner swap between Israel and Hamas freed Sharawna after 9 years in captivity. 1,026 Palestinian detainees were released under the terms of the agreement, but many prisoners have been rearrested, including Sharawna, who was rearrested in January 2012 based on the contents of a, quote, secret administrative file. Catrone added, quote, military prosecutors alleged that Sharawna had violated the terms of his release, but never disclosed their charges to Sharawna or his attorneys. The prosecutors demanded that Sharawna complete the remaining 28 years of his previous military sentence, from which he had received an Israeli presidential pardon under the exchange agreement, and began a series of secretive, often closed military court hearings against him. On July 1st last year, he announced an open hunger strike with the immediate goal of winning his freedom. Meanwhile, in a press release from Ad-Damir, the Palestinian prisoners' advocacy organization, Palestinian human rights groups are, quote, gravely concerned about the ongoing deteriorating health conditions of 4 hunger-striking Palestinian prisoners in Israeli detention. The press release states, quote, in particular, the condition of Samer Isawi, who has been on partial hunger strike since August 1, 2012, has reached a critical level. Israeli authorities have been pressuring Samer to accept a deal that would see him forcibly transferred to the Gaza Strip in return for him ending his strike. Samer has repeatedly refused to accept any such deal, which is a blatant violation of the prohibition of the forcible transfer of the protected Palestinian population. He was scheduled to have a court hearing earlier this week. However, this was postponed until May. Unless there is a positive change in the immediate future, this postponement is tantamount to a death sentence for Samer. Ad-Damir and Palestinian human rights group Al-Haq also state their serious concerns with the health of Yunus Al-Khuroub, who has been protesting his administrative detention, a practice of imprisonment without charge or trial. Al-Khuroub has been on hunger strike since February 19th, and his arms and legs have been shackled to his bed. Two other prisoners, Samer Al-Bark and Amr Musa, are also on hunger strike. Al-Bark is in solitary confinement, and Ad-Damir says they have been barred from visiting him for several weeks. For much more on the report on Ayman Sharawna and for more on Palestinian prisoners, visit electronicintifada.net. In related news, the Electronic Intifada's contributor Math Musle reported this week on the ongoing attacks by the Israeli military on the village of Isawiya in East Jerusalem, home to hunger striker Samer Isawi. Musle reports, quote, Isawi began refusing meals shortly after his arrest in July last year and has been on intermittent hunger strike ever since. As his health deteriorates, the mobilization in support of his fast grows. Samer's family have erected a protest tent in Isawiya. This tent has been demolished more than 20 times by Israeli troops. Isawi's arrest was not the only thing that prompted residents of the village to act. Long before that, the Israeli-controlled Jerusalem municipality had been actively confiscating land owned by residents of Isawiya. Hundreds of dunams have been seized in the past year for the benefit of two planned projects, a national park and a dump for solid waste. A dunam is 1,000 square meters. Musle adds in his report, Isawiya is a hot spot in Jerusalem. The protests in the village have nearly always led to heavy clashes with the Israeli forces. Nightly raids and arrests have been a regular occurrence. Musle adds that Isawiya is inhabited by more than 12,000 Palestinians. Since its occupation by Israel in 1967, more than 12,000 dunams have been confiscated, and that in November 2011, the Jerusalem municipality published a plan to build a national park on the lands of Isawiya and Atur villages. This plan will effectively suffocate Isawiya and prevent its expansion to the south. The municipality named the plan, quote, They See Not Nor Know 2012. Joining us to talk about what's happening in Jerusalem, including Isawiya and his home village of Beit Safafa, is Math Musle. He's a journalist and blogger based in Jerusalem and a visiting lecturer at Al-Quds Bard Honors College. Math, thank you so much for joining us on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Isawiya in the context of what's happening across Jerusalem to Palestinian families and their homes. Give us an update on the types of repression and demolition of Palestinian homes across the city, especially in Isawiya, and the kinds of resistance that Palestinians are engaging in day by day.
In several villages of Jerusalem, there are many issues. Each village has its unique issue and unique problem with the occupation. But house demolitions and house evictions is something that's mostly common between most of the villages. For example, in Sheikh Jarrah, a whole area in Sheikh Jarrah is under the threat of being evicted. There has been an eviction order for one of the houses in March 1st, but it was postponed. But several cases are in the court and they're under the threat of being evicted, at least 9 houses in Sheikh Jarrah. In Isawiya, they have been confiscating parts of the dunams of Isawiya land and several villages nearby in order to, as they say, build land projects like what they call National Park or the dumpster for the solid waste. And the main reason for these projects is to actually cut off Jerusalem from the West Bank and make a connection between the Ma'al Adumim settlement and Jerusalem. In Beit Hanina, several times there have been house demolitions. In Beit Safafa, there have been land confiscations, and it's not only on about Road 4, because there is also the new a new plan that's still coming ahead, which is Road 10, that's going to also connect settlements to the main road, and there's also the Givat HaMatos settlement that has been approved last year, and they might start working on it anytime with a lot of land confiscation as well, and also cutting Beit Safafa from Jerusalem. What they plan to do is really to turn these villages into just neighborhoods, on the outskirts of Jerusalem that could easily be, to destroy the identity of each of these villages.
That's the voice of Math Musleh. He's a contributor to the Electronic Intifada. Math, can you talk about what these kinds of attacks, for example, in Beit Hanina, in Isawiya, look like? What does it look like when the Israeli army comes in and starts demolishing homes? What happens to the families?
Usually when they come to the minister's house, they usually don't really give much time for the families to leave the house and take their stuff with them. In many cases, they make the families pay for the demolition. Some families, they don't have the money to pay these fines or the price of the demolition, so they end up demolishing their own houses with their own bare hands. The houses that they built with their own hands, they demolish it stone by stone with their own hands. It also happened lately in Bab Hotta, inside the old city, where a man was forced to demolish his own house. These families are always left homeless. They either find families or in some cases they stay in tents till they find a place to stay in. Really, the life what the families go through is unbearable, especially for the children. The children is probably the most sector who suffers from these demolitions and instability in their lives and brutality. In some cases, like in Isawiya, if they were demolish their houses, like the house of Samir's brother that they demolished not long ago, they get in with a big force to look tough and try to threaten or scare the people and into not doing anything. So really, it's not an easy thing for families, especially those families who have no one to go to.
Math, can you talk about the kinds of resistance that is happening in villages like Isawiya and Beit Safafa, and what people are doing to mobilize in their communities to resist these attacks and threats of home demolitions?
As I said in my latest article on Isawiya, the occupation have given each village a unique problem to care about. In Silwan, for example, they have mostly the arresting of the children. In Isawiya, it's mostly the raids and the arrest. In Beit Hanina, house demolitions. In Sheikh Jarrah, house evictions. So every village would have its own unique problem that really would disassociate each village from another. There is a lack of source of solidarity between the villages, and there needs to be more of a coordination between the villages. Currently, each village are fighting their own fight with some support from individual activists, and sometimes from near villages, but not not enough. But each village mainly fight their own fight. In Beit Safafa, they have been organizing protests after protests, and the protests have been big. And for Beit Safafa, for example, the occupation wants Beit Safafa to remain calm, so it has been calm since the first intifada. There has no major clashes has happened in Beit Safafa. So they are a bit sensitive about Beit Safafa, and they try really not to escalate the conflict there. In Isawiya, it's a place where the protests always turn into clashes, and the Israeli army are really brutal in dealing with the people in Isawiya. With night raids, in the past 3 months, there have been an escalation in their campaign against Isawiya. And in some days, they would raid the village 4 times in one day. They'd come in the morning, and then again in noon, and then afternoon, and then at night. They'd raid it sometimes four times a day. But nevertheless, the people of Isawiya have been resisting nonstop. They still go on protest. The Israeli army could not defeat the spirit of the people. So eventually, the people, especially people in Jerusalem, they know that they have nothing to lose and there is nowhere to go. And all what they can do is just keep on fighting. And that's their only option.
All right. Well, we're going to keep a close eye on all that's happening in Jerusalem, of course. Math Musleh, thank you so much for being there for us as our contributor. And to read more of Math's latest reports and for much more on the situation in Jerusalem, visit electronicintifada.net. Math, thank you so much for being with us today on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you.
This week, Israeli naval forces began turning away Gaza fishermen from Gaza's shores in an ongoing policy to prevent fishing within a 6 nautical mile limit. Israel has repeatedly violated the ceasefire agreement signed last November between Israel and Hamas, which expanded the fishing limit from 3 nautical miles. The Electronic Intifada's Rami Al-Megari reports.
Gaza fishermen are expressing the resentment over the ban. Over the weekend, Israeli naval vessels fired live ammunition on Gaza fishermen, preventing them from sailing. Jamal Abu Watfa is a 55-year-old fisherman.
Our season this year will be cut short due to this ban, especially the months of April and May. As you see here, fishermen have already prepared the fishing tools and lights, yet they have been surprised that the shores are off limits to them. Fishermen usually rely on both April and May of the year as a good source of their incomes.
In the coastal Gaza Strip, fish is considered to be a main source of nutrition for Gaza's 1.6 million residents. In the Gaza seaport alone, there are 2,000 fishermen. They will be able to fish only within a 3 nautical mile limit. Last Thursday, a Gaza-based armed Salafist faction, calling itself the Council of Shura al-Mujahideen, claimed responsibility for firing 4 rockets into nearby Israeli areas. The rocket fire came while U.S. President Barack Obama was visiting the region. Israel held the ruling Hamas party in Gaza responsible for the rocket fire. Hamas authorities called on Egyptian mediators to pressure Israel to back down the recent fishing ban. Rami Al-Migari, reporting for the Electronic Intifada, Gaza.
This is Asawin Stanley in London, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. You're listening to our weekly podcast featuring news, views and analysis on Palestine and the issues affecting Palestinian human rights. Visit us on the web at electronicintifada.net or on Twitter at Intifada.
The Electronic Intifada's Asa Winstanley reported this week that a British judge comprehensively dismissed a high-profile legal attack on the University and College Union. The case was brought after Democratic Union bodies discussed boycotts of Israel. An employment tribunal ruled the claim of, quote, institutional anti-Semitism brought by union member and Academic Friends of Israel director Ronnie Fraser was dismissed on all counts. The Electronic Intifada added that the ruling is a dramatic and comprehensive defeat for the Israeli lawfare strategy and may even have backfired for its proponents who descended into acrimonious internal backbiting. Our report explained that after dismissing each one of the points of the complaint in detail, the court ruling appears to foreclose the possibility of another such lawfare attack ever being brought to court again, at least using UK tribunals. The judge stated in the ruling that, quote, lessons should be learned from this sorry saga. We greatly regret that the case was ever brought. At heart, it represents an impermissible attempt to achieve a political end by litigious means. It would be very unfortunate if an exercise of this sort were ever repeated, unquote. Winstanley added that it is this key passage of the ruling that means anti-Palestinian activists may rue the day they ever contemplated, quote, the wreckage of this litigation, as the judge frankly put it. The judge said that no public service like the tribunals should have spent time and resources on cases such as this, nor should the union have been, quote, put to the trouble and expense of defending proceedings of this order or anything like it. Another important finding is that, quote, a belief in the Zionist project or an attachment to Israel cannot amount to a protected characteristic under the Equality Act of 2010. This properly sets a clear red line between Zionism and Judaism or Jewish identity. Quote, the verdict is a comprehensive defeat for Israel's lawfare project, supporters of Israeli war crimes, and assorted Zionist fanatics in the UK, Winstanley noted. For much more detail into this precedent-setting victory against the Israel lobby, visit Asa Winstanley's blog at electronicintifada.net. EI contributor Gabriel Scivone reported this week from the 20th Annual Conference of Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano de Aztlán, or MECHA, the largest association of Latino-Latina youth in North America. Last year, MECHA overwhelmingly endorsed the global movement of the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. During the past 12 months, there have been numerous cross-movement initiatives by students across the country. Scivone reported that at the conference, a vote was passed by a large majority to work with Students for Justice in Palestine and similar groups, quote, until the Palestinian people are liberated. He interviewed SJP organizer Dania Mustafa, who attended the conference. Quote, it's very important to support all struggles that have to do with human rights issues, Mustafa said. Migrant justice and indigenous rights issues here in the U.S. do have parallels with what is going on with the Palestinian cause. It's important to keep a community of those who support all human rights globally and also work together in spreading awareness of the issue of oppression of people. To read the entire two-part interview with Dania Mustafa, visit our Activism and BDS blog on electronicintifada.net. And now we go to news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. On March 21st in Toronto, York University's Undergraduate Student Union, the York Federation of Students, passed a resolution in favor of the Palestinian-led boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. The York Federation of Students is the largest student union in Canada. The resolution demands that the university administration, quote, abides by the BDS call and urges York to withdraw its investments from Northrop Grumman, BAE Systems, Amphenol, and other companies that are selling weapons and military equipment to Israel. Last November, the Graduate Students Union at York passed a similar resolution during the 8 days of Israeli attacks on Gaza. When the Graduate Students Union's resolution passed, York student activists announced that they are working to encourage the Undergraduate Students Union to endorse the BDS motion as well. In the last 3 weeks, student unions and governments at the University of California at Riverside, the University of California at San Diego, and now York University have passed comprehensive boycott resolutions urging their administrations to stop investing in companies which profit from Israel's military occupation. For more on this story, other current news from the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and to read more about the national and international student solidarity movements for Palestinian rights, check out our Activism and BDS blog on electronicintifada.net. And that's it for our weekly Electronic Intifada podcast. For news, information, cultural features and reviews, pointed opinion and analysis, and action alerts by our team of correspondents and bloggers, visit us online at electronicintifada.net. This week, be sure to check out our newest features and op-eds, such as Israelis on Facebook react to a photo of Palestinian kids. Also, an Israeli corporal says break every bone of a crying Palestinian child seized on his way to school. Trade, not aid, the focus of a new attempt to break the Gaza blockade. Dehesha Camp University questions what it means to be a refugee. Palestinian football icons speak out against European championships taking place in Israel. Anti-Palestinian groups' advice to campus activists raises ethical and legal concerns, how Caterpillar destroys livelihoods in Europe and Palestine, and much more. At electronicintifada.net, you can also post comments and sign up for our daily email digest. Follow us on Twitter at Intifada. Radio stations are free to use this podcast, and a special thanks to Flashpoints and KPFA in Berkeley. On behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thank you for listening.